Over to you.
Rob asked me to introduce myself, so I'll just give you a very, very quick background. 20 years in the Royal Air Force, primarily flying in the Air Transport Force, literally around the world at one point. And I was a training captain and an examiner in the RAF. When Judy and I felt that the Lord was calling us out of the RAF, we didn't actually know where we were going. But because we'd been supporters of MAF ourselves, I let MAF know that we were, as it were, coming on the market. I was looking at airline jobs and that kind of thing. And MAF said, we're looking for somebody just like you to come and help set up a new operation in Africa and be our trainer and examiner there. I never, ever thought that I would have the title missionary, but I found myself as a missionary pilot for 7 years. And then after that, we came back to the UK. The Lord opened the doors, and I was very fortunate to get into the UK Airlines. If any of you went on holiday from Manchester Airport in the 1990s with a company called Air Tours, you might recognize the voice. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome on board. So that's my background. May I say just a little as a complimentary remark to what Rob was saying? I'm not here primarily to raise funds for MAF. Some people assume that mission speakers always are. I want to portray the story of MAF so that it prompts you to give glory to God. After that, what he says to you individually or as a church is between you and him. I will say, however, if anybody's feeling a little bit flush and wants to give us an aeroplane, have a word afterwards. I'm very discreet. And the other thing, quite seriously, is that 10% of our flights are funded by legacies. Somebody said we should call it our pay-as-you-go scheme. There we are. So, to MAF. Let me go just to one other place. First, I think I've already done the job of waking you up, but there was a report on the internet about 3, possibly 4 years ago about an American airline aircraft flying from Seattle to Los Angeles down the west coast of America, and it had to divert into Sacramento for some reason and wait there for a while. And the captain called the cabin supervisor and said, we're going to be here for an hour or so, so if the passengers want to get off, they can do. So she made that announcement, and most people got off, and the captain went down the cabin, and he saw one lady remaining on board, and he knew her. She was a regular passenger. She was actually a blind lady, and her name was Kathy. And so he went down and spoke to her and said, if you'd like to go and stretch your legs, Kathy, we'll be here for an hour or so, and I'll call you in plenty of time to come back. And she said, no, I'm comfortable to stay in the aircraft, but maybe my guide dog, Barney, who's under the seat in front of me, maybe he'd like to go for a walk. And the captain said, okay, well, I'll look after that. It is said that as he left the aircraft wearing his Ray-Bans, the sunglasses of choice for pilots, and carrying his flight bag in one hand and holding the harness of the guide dog in the other, that there was a stampede in the terminal as people went to book their onward flight to Los Angeles with another company. Now, as I say, that has nothing whatsoever to do with MAF, but on an early service, I do like to make sure that everybody's awake before we move on to MAF itself. So, the story of MAF, flying for life, our worldwide work. What is MAF all about? What is MAF in the first instance? How did MAF come into being? Why is MAF needed? Who benefits from us? And what is God telling us through MAF? That's what I'd like to cover this morning. There are 5 points rather than the standard 3 for a sermon or address, but don't worry, it's not going to go on 40% longer or 70% longer at all. What is MAF? MAF is a Christian organization, and our mission is to use light aircraft to bring people in developing countries the help they need. And so our product is care for people in body, mind, and spirit. How did it all begin? There were a handful of pilots and engineers at the end of World War II who said, we've been given all these skills, how can we use these to take God's love to people overseas? And they made investigation with mission organizations and others, and the result of that was that in 1945, British and American branches of MAF were set up. The Australian branch came just a little bit later. In 1948, British MAF made a survey flight in Africa, and in 1950, our first flight took place in the southern area of Sudan, what is now the independent country of South Sudan, and it took place with this aircraft, a Dragon Rapide, wood and canvas, that could carry 8 passengers, and off we were. Why is MAF needed? Well, very simply, in many parts of the world, surface travel is difficult or dangerous or time-consuming. The danger may be physical from the topography, it may be from bandits and people like that, but whichever it is, many remote communities are isolated by natural or human barriers. In Papua New Guinea, where this picture is taken, there are many communities living among the mountains. You may know this from other sources. There are 800 or so different language groups in that country, and many of them are just villages of a few hundred people with a separate language from the people next door. So there's a great deal of isolation. In Sudan, where we did that first survey, Stuart King, who is the RAF engineer officer, who was one of the founders of UKMAF, remarked that there are vast areas where there are no real roads at all, and what tracks there are impassable for months of the year. Now, I talked to Derek Ree, who flew in Kenya and Uganda for MAF in recent years. I spoke to him in 2011, and he said this: "From my experience of flying in Sudan regularly over the past few years, nothing has changed." So there we are. Nothing had moved on from 1948 in many parts of the country. And this is the main road from Uganda into South Sudan, as it was in 2008. Not quite the M6, as you can see. And you get all sorts of congestion there. This kind of situation, you can imagine how long it'll take people to get through there. Why don't they just go round through a fresh part of the woodland? Landmines, because of all the conflict in that part of the world. Likewise, you can imagine how long it's going to take these people to get through rainforest in Madagascar. They are missionaries going to one of the many isolated villages. Only less than 1% of the villages in the outlying parts of Madagascar have any kind of reasonable communication back into the capital. And the situation is not improving. In 1998, that's right, in the 1980s and just after, the World Bank estimated that in southern and southeastern Sudan, southern and southeastern Zaire, they were losing 2,500 miles of road a year. Roads that had been built by the Belgian colonialists to exploit the country and take out the mineral wealth, those roads were no longer being maintained. And so the rainforest was gradually encroaching. This used to be a two-lane road that these ladies are walking down now. It's now only accessible on foot or with a picky-picky, a motorbike, to use the onomatopoeic name for them, as they do in these parts of the world. Jumping to the Far East, Bangladesh, normally one-third covered by water. When the floods came, do you remember Bangladesh floods a few years ago? Another one-third of the country was covered by water. Okay, you can get around on water with boats and so on, but it's certainly not a quick way of doing it. And so, in short, in many unimproved parts of the world, there is a pressing need for safe and dependable and quick travel. And that's where MAF provides the answer. And we have a link in here to our first reading. I don't think Isaiah foresaw the use of aircraft, but he said, "See, I'm doing a new thing. I'm making a way in the desert." And we'll see later how it worked out in Bangladesh. "I provide water to give drink to my people." That is the kind of ministry that MAF provides in support of those who do the work on the ground. Our immediate activity is using aircraft, but we're not about aircraft, we're about the people whom we can serve in these difficult-to-reach areas through the agencies whose people and whose equipment we carry in our aircraft. And so we bring help to and hope to people in places and situations where flying is not a luxury for a holiday or whatever, but it's a lifeline, and we're often the only operator going into the areas that we serve. So in the early days, we just had that handful of people. What now? Now, these are the areas that MEF serves around the world with the primary operating groups listed there. MEF Europe embraces support groups from a number of different countries, and in 2006, those various national groups got together and formed MEF International, and we now have more than 1,400 staff, 135, 140 aircraft, the number varies slightly from time to time. We fly to something like 1,800 communities in more than 30 countries. Just pause. We said it all started with a handful of people. Do you remember Jesus and the 5 loaves and 2 fishes? And he fed 5,000 people. Out of the faith of a handful of people, this is what God has brought into being. That's why I say, I don't want you to think primarily about MAF as the be-all and end-all of what I'm talking about. I want you to give glory to God for what he's doing to help and care for his people through the work of one particular mission agency. On average, each day, these are last year's statistics, we make 275 flights, fly more than 27,000 miles, carry nearly 750 passengers and 25 tons of freight. And on average, think about it this way, this is a good one to keep in mind, on average, every 3 minutes, there's an MAF aircraft taking off or landing somewhere in the world. That gives you that perspective for what God has done. And it isn't easy. We use some of the most demanding airstrips in the world. I just feel a need to say, if any of you have watched the television program about the worst place to be a pilot, Papua New Guinea, or it may be Papua, the western side of the island, I think, we formally, in MAF, dissociate ourselves from the flying standards you see in the program. Yes, we operate in that area. We do not accept some of the airstrips that Susie Air fly into, and nor do we accept some of their flying standards. I don't want to sound pompous or condemning about that. I'm simply saying that there are ways of doing these things which are professional, which make it reliable, safe, and which honor the Lord. And that's what we seek to do. We don't claim perfection, we're not infallible, but please don't think of MEF as being something like Susie Air, because it most certainly isn't. Things can still go adrift. If you get on the wrong part of an airstrip in South Sudan, you can find yourself in a situation like this. And it doesn't matter whether you've got 4 gold bars on your shoulders. You don't just stand back. If you're an MAF pilot, you get stuck in and you do whatever needs doing to get the job going again. But he's okay. He's got plenty of young supervisors to make sure that he does it properly. So he's all right. And wherever we go, we are always welcome. Just to take a look at South Sudan, there is the country, South Sudan as it is now, the green border. A few years ago, we didn't have a base there. We do now at Juba, the capital, but a few years ago, we had a base at Lokichogio in northwest Kenya, and from there, this would be a typical day's flying for an MEF pilot. Up to Akobo, over to Wau, up to Malakal, down to Rumbek, down to the capital, Juba, and back to Lokichogio. And in doing that, that pilot would cover 1,000 nautical miles, he'd fly to 6 destinations, he'd have 7 hours flying, and an 11-hour duty day, and all of that in temperatures of 40 degrees Celsius. I think you'll agree, that's a pretty demanding day's work. That is a representative day in the life of somebody like Derek Ree when he was flying up there. So who does MEF serve? Who benefits from MEF? Well, in the early days, it was all expatriate missionaries, almost all expatriate missionaries and their families in remote areas. And so the organization was called Missionary Aviation Fellowship. Now it's Mission Aviation Fellowship, because we work with many organizations within the country. We serve about 1,800 organizations of various kinds, medical, relief and development, national churches, as well as missions, and government agencies and NGOs. These ladies are using a well that was dug with equipment that MAF flew in. MAF will have taken in the pump that the lady who's bending over is using, and they now have a supply of fresh drinkable water instead of having to walk possibly a long distance to a supply which would not be pure in the first place. There is quality of life and health being uplifted through the work of MAF. When health or life is at stake, our aircraft become air ambulances. And this is where we look to our general flying support fund. We don't say, can this person afford to pay for the flight? We say, if that person needs help, then we'll carry them. If there is an agency which can cover the cost of the flight, then that's fine. But if not, we take them anyway. I always have to be careful about throwing in too many ad libs, especially with the strict time limit that Rob has given me. He's looking to the sky already. But let me just tell you about a friend of mine, John Clifford, flying in Tanzania, taking a Tanzanian lady to hospital. And she was due to give birth, and she decided to give birth while they were flying to hospital. In a British Airways aircraft, you occasionally have more persons on board when you land than when you take off, and you've got cabin staff who have some degree of medical training. John was on his own, and he found himself flying the aircraft with one hand and holding the head of the baby as it came out with the other. That is not part of our pilot's license training, but that's all part of the adaptability of the game. We bring emergency aid to refugees who are displaced from their homes, whether it's natural disaster or whether it's human conflict or whatever. And again, we are often the only people bringing in external help. Pastors in Tanzania can get around to more villages in the Maasai and other areas by traveling with an MAF aircraft. You can see the one there in the background. There we are. And so they can reach and teach and evangelize among many more people. Cataract operations. If you're going far from your hospital base as a medical specialist, it could take in Africa a day of traveling, then a day you do your day's work, and then another day to get back home. With an MAF aircraft, you go out in the morning, do your day's work, and you're back home in the evening. So we multiply their effectiveness by a factor of three. You see how we're achieving what in military terms we call a force multiplication to achieve more. Our aircraft in Sudan and in Kenya are working flat out still among the refugee places in South Sudan, which were very much in the news a while ago. They're not now in fashion. It's more about politics in the news at the moment, but that work goes on. Bangladesh. Aha. We have float planes to take advantage of all that water in Bangladesh. And when the floods came, one of the first things we took into people was water purifying outfits. You're surrounded by water, but in no time at all, it's full of cholera. I am providing drink for my people. Do you remember those words from Isaiah? Here is a manifestation of it now in a way that Isaiah would never have envisaged. The aircraft I flew, a Beech 99, 15-passenger aircraft, one day we carried a load of aluminium cans, empty aluminium cans, to a hospital in eastern Zaire. Why did we do that? Because if they went by lorry, 3 days in good weather, 3 weeks in the rainy season, three quarters of them would be too damaged to be of any use by the time they got to the other end. So it seems like a fairly strange load to carry, all these cans, but 100% of them were usable when they got to the other end. So it was economical for the hospital and their supporters to use the MEF aircraft to do it. Again, going back in the news, Haiti, I'm taking this at a bit of a sprint, but I hope you're happy with me. When the earthquake came in Haiti, MEF already had three aircraft there. We put in an extra aircraft, a manager who was used to coordinating disaster response, and satellite communication equipment, and that we increased our flying rate tenfold, and in less than 3 weeks we carried 2,500 passengers and around 230 tons of supplies, a lot of it food to people who were displaced from their normal homes, who therefore needed support to keep them going. And one rather lovely story was this concerning this young girl called Mika. Her feet had been very badly injured in the earthquake. She lived on an offshore island, and the American MEF pilot had expected to carry some doctors to a hospital that morning. Then he was told that flight was cancelled. And so he was able to answer an emergency call to pick up Mika, to take her to hospital. Then he heard that the doctors were available after all. So he came back to Port-au-Prince, the capital, with Mika on board, and then went to the hospital. They were three orthopedic specialists. Do you not see God's hand in that? Mika and three specialists in the kind of medicine that she needed to help her. And a few weeks later, she was on her feet again and restored to her family and life back in that offshore island. So, in summary, here are some of the kinds of work that we deal with. I'm not going to read them all out. You can scan them and see the wide, wide, wide variety of work which is supported. We sometimes call ourselves the Samaritan's donkey. We are there to facilitate the work of the people on the ground who do this kind of thing. And some of the agencies we work with, some you'll recognize, Tear Fund, Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Boundaries, Doctors Without Borders, and United Nations High Commission for Refugees, and people like that. These are some of those 1,800 or so organizations that we support with our aircraft. People, I'm told, like to know what sort of aircraft we use, and in my time in the 1980s, this was a typical scene. The aircraft in the background is the one that I flew, and the smaller piston-engined aircraft is the kind of aircraft that was used to go into the more remote spots, the smaller places. Here we're at the hospital airstrip in Zaire, near Nkundi. We had come in from Nairobi, 3 hours flying, and the supplies that we'd brought in and the people we'd brought in were getting into small aircraft to go to their stations and their clinics and their mission stations and the like in the rainforest of Zaire. Nowadays, we use this aircraft as our main workhorse. It's called a Cessna Caravan. According to the model, it carries 10 or 12 people, a turboprop aircraft, which is helpful because now ordinary aviation petrol, aviation gasoline, is very expensive and very difficult to get, whereas turbine fuel, which is a refined form of paraffin, is much cheaper and much more widely available. We're also introducing an aircraft called a Kodiak, which is 3/4 the size of the Caravan, but it has a more powerful engine. It's been especially designed for working in areas such as those in which we work. And we also have a new little Tiddler. This is just a 3-passenger aeroplane, but it's unusual because it has a piston engine. I won't get too technical. It's a piston engine which is converted to work on the diesel principle, but it doesn't use diesel fuel. It uses aviation turbine fuel. Are you with me? It uses that cheapest form of fuel, and so it's very efficient, very cost-effective. And that's used in places like Madagascar, where we're reaching out to those remote villages to give them connection back to hospitals and education and so on. Where do the aircraft come from? I think this is lovely. Our aircraft come from a variety of sources, Christians, Christian businesses, people like Swedish Lions in the early days provided 6 aircraft to MEF. We have a company in the Isle of Man who were a Christian company, and they had been blessed in their business, and isn't this super? It doesn't say, aren't we doing well, donated by. It says we're celebrating God's blessing, and we want to share God's blessing elsewhere. Where do the people come from? It's not all pilots and engineers, not by any means at all. We have people who are managers, accountants, secretaries, building project overseers, IT people, administrators, and so on. And as far as possible, we recruit people locally. This is not an ego trip for expatriates. As far as possible, we recruit people locally, but the expatriates who are involved, as Judy and I were in the 1980s, are Christians who are affirmed and supported by their home churches, then trained and got ready as far as may be necessary by MEF, and then you go out and join the team. And so we say from the MEF side, what is God saying to all of us through MEF? Well, we say, if we can reach you, then we can reach the people that we serve around the world. And we come back to that second reading. Jesus said, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, other translations say brothers or sisters of mine, you did for me. We work with some of the world's least people. Least educated, least developed in the Western sense, least in touch with the outside world, having least access to help, whether it's spiritual, medical, or whatever else. We work with some of the very least of Jesus's brothers and sisters. So what would I invite you to take from this? We have at the back there various books, one of them written by Stuart King, who was, in human terms, the founder of British MAF. Superb book. You don't need to be interested in mission work. You don't need to be interested in flying. It's a wonderful read in itself. Dare I say, Christmas is not far away. Get somebody to get one for you, or get one for somebody in your family, or whatever. That and other books are available down the back. If you'd like to keep in touch with what we're doing, we have a newsletter called Flying for Life, and there are signature sheets at the back where you can just put your name and address, and that will come to you. That involves no commitment. It doesn't involve any cost. It comes free. You will get mailings from MEF, yes, but that will give you news 4 times a year of what is going on and what the Lord is doing through this particular form of ministry. And if you want to use it, a prayer diary comes with it as well. I went to one secular group, I won't say who or what they were, because they weren't too far from here, actually, and there were 75 people there, and I found one signature on the signature sheet at the end of the meeting, and I thought, what on earth did I do wrong? But a friend of mine was there with his wife, and his wife is a fairly forceful person. And when she heard about this, at the next meeting, she went round and said, why didn't you sign up? Why didn't you sign up? Why didn't you sign up? And they all rose up with one accord and said, we didn't want to be first to put our name on the list. Now, you're not people like that in Boynton, are you? So I hope there will be a good number of you who'd like to keep in touch with what God is doing through MEF in that particular way. I invite you to accept the MEF challenge. Tell somebody else about MEF tomorrow. If you belong to a Rotary, Probus, a golf club, whatever, we're very happy to come and talk to groups of all shapes and sizes and purposes about what MEF is doing, and you can follow us on the internet into the bargain. And so, in summary, we have this situation where, as I said, it's like the 5 loaves and 2 fish. From the faith of a handful of airmen and women in 1945, God has brought into being a major air service provider which brings love and help and hope to people in out-of-the-way places in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Thank you for your attention. Thank you.